It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. We start with the Cleveland Indians, and it's not quite the same as a fantasy topic as it is the biggest topic in the baseball world, but we did want to touch on it because it's kind of what everybody's talking about right now. So a couple of questions regarding the Indians that we will start with, and I think you posed an interesting one to me before we started, Fred, and that is rest of the year, Francisco Lindor or Jose Ramirez. And I think that my answer to that, I think it comes down to two main things, and one is positional flexibility, and the other is batting average, because aside from that, it's hard to tell them apart this season. But I think for the rest of the year, I'm taking Ramirez because I can plug him in at a bunch of different spots, and because he is a consistent 310 hitter since the beginning of last year. With that said, well, one, I'm curious to hear your answer to that, but the other thing I want to kind of examine here is what this year has done to Lindor as we examine shortstops for 2018. But I'll get to that in a second. I would like to hear your answer to your own question first.
Yeah, for the rest of the year, this one, it's really tight. I think for the rest of the year, I might take Lindor just because the shortstop isn't as deep as second or third base right now. But it's really splitting hairs. And I think for 2018, it's almost splitting hairs as well. Lindor, it's interesting. I think Lindor's fantasy value for 2018 has gone up because he started hitting for average again, and the power jump this year is substantial. Yet Ramirez has been so good this year that Lindor was an early round pick last year. His fantasy value has increased, and Ramirez may have still passed him. And when I'm drafting for next season, I like the fact that Ramirez is going to be eligible at two positions and Lindor obviously just at one. So I like Ramirez from that. And I think I still lean Lindor a little bit in both cases, but it's like neck and neck. Like I'm going to guess that in 2018 rankings, they're going to be side-by-side or pretty much side-by-side, drafted in the same round.
Who do you have as right now with Lindor's burst? And I think part of what's interesting about Lindor is it's a weird season. Like, this is he was a guy who – he was a little like Bogarts coming into this year. Some power, some steals, nice batting average, one of those kind of all around. The average is kind of – dipped a little on the year, though, as you note, it's come on lately, and that's encouraging because that can be kind of a fluky stat. And the power has exploded. So when we talk about this clutch of young shortstops, and we note that Bogarts has almost certainly fallen significantly in those rankings, give me a quick preview. Where does Lindor rank among shortstops for 2018 for you?
Yeah, I think the batting average is not really – yeah, I agree with you. I think the batting average is not a concern for me. Like, he's hitting .314 in the second half. His BABIP this season is .279, and in the previous years it was, you know, .324, .348. So really, he's just – now, he is hitting more fly balls, which hurts your will hurt your BABIP a little bit. But overall, I think this is still someone who profiles as a high 200s, if not a 300 hitter. So I think Lindor – yeah, you're right. I think that he's left Bogarts well behind. I think Lindor is a preferable option right now to Corey Seager. And I know that, like, in real baseball, Corey Seager is loved and is a really good player. But in fantasy, like, Seager hasn't made that power jump to be a 30-something homer player that Lindor's done this year. And Seager doesn't steal bases. So I think Lindor can provide as many or more home runs, definitely more steals, at least a similar batting average. I think I would rather have Lindor. I think I would probably still take Carlos Correa over Lindor, although with Correa not stealing bases, I think that now becomes very close. And I think Manny Machado is also not separate from Lindor anymore because Machado doesn't steal bases and for a large part of the season wasn't hitting for average. So I think Lindor like can make a legit case if he keeps going the way he's going for a couple more weeks. Let's say he finishes the year batting .285 or something. I think he could make a legit case to be taken number one. Like, Matthew, do you see any of Correa, Machado, or Seager as, like, a tier above Lindor?
No, I don't think there's anybody clearly above him. I can certainly see the case for Correa, and that is if you kind of give him credit for what he missed and you kind of extrapolate those numbers out, it's a little more, I guess, believable is the wrong word, but the power spike from Correa is something we kind of
expected and saw coming. He's got, I think, 20 homers in 99 games. That's a 30-home run pace. And it just kind of feels out of the blue with Lindor. It's not that we didn't think it was possible, but I'm a little more inclined to believe it. So to answer your question, no, I would not put any of those guys a clear tier ahead of him. Whatever the top tier is definitely includes Lindor for 18. But I think in particular with Correa, if you wanted to make the case that his power potential is a little more real, that you have a little more faith that he repeats this next year, I think that's a case that could be made. And the other way that could change is if Seager, between now and in the postseason, I think you're going to have to watch that if they make a deep run, if he shows himself to be healthy, if he comes back and really hits like the guy we expect, 2 weeks of that would not be enough. If he gets hot today and just goes through the end of the season, okay. If the Dodgers make a deep run into October and we see a month and a half of Corey Seager looking like the guy we know he can be, that would be another way he could sort of bump himself up. But again, I think the point you're making is a fair one, which is that that's still probably bumping him up, if that happens, to the top of Tier 1 that Lindor is also in, rather than pushing him clearly into a group that Lindor is not a part of.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to slightly alter some of the things I said. And while I'm thinking of Machado as a shortstop now, like, that's not really a thing won't be a thing next year. And it's interesting, Elvis Andrus has been by far the best fantasy shortstop this year. We haven't even mentioned him. And then there's also Trey Turner. So in my head, my quick ranking for next year, I'll also say something against Lindor, and that's that he's hitting leadoff right now. And other than Charlie Blackmon, leadoff hitters tend to have a bit of a cap on how many runs they can drive in, whereas Correa is hitting in the heart of the lineup. Gives you a better chance of maybe getting to 100 in both runs and RBIs. My quick thought off the top of my head was that my shortstop rankings would be Turner, Correa, Lindor, and I still wouldn't put Andrus that, like, and then I'm probably Seager. I still wouldn't put Andrus there, but maybe I need an off season to come around a little bit to what Andrus has done this year, because 20 homers, 24 steals, 304 batting average right now, he's going to score 100 runs. Like, maybe I need to give him a little more credit, and I'm discounting too much this big breakout of him this year.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with being a little suspicious of a guy who is going to end up with as many home runs this year as he's had the past 4 years combined when he's been healthy all four of those years. I don't have any problem with believing that Andrus is more the 2016 guy for real than the 2017 guy. I don't think that's problematic. Trey Turner is a great point, and boy, he's really, he's been looked like himself since coming back. A guy who not that long ago was a first-round pick, and in some years even a high first-round pick, Carlos Gonzalez, was also written off, understandably, for a good portion of this year. He has been torrid lately. Is he a guy to pick up if he's on the waiver wire? And some places he is. And what is he doing for his 2018 value as he comes on here?
Yeah, I actually think for 2018, it's still a question of whether or not you would draft him. And I don't know, I don't feel strongly like I would go out to draft him. Like, we have a lot of sample for not a great season and then a couple of good weeks here at the end. I would say for the rest of this year, I would not want to own him next week. Next week, they go to San Francisco and San Diego. With what he's done all season and then those parks next week, I'm not racing out to get him unless I have a really wide open spot and I'm in a deeper league. However, if he has a few more good days, that final week of the season, they're at home against the Marlins and at home against the Dodgers. And that final weekend, we don't know if the Dodgers will be playing for anything. And who knows what they'll roll out for pitching if that's the case. So I would be interested in him if he could keep this going for that final week. Maybe I would even grab him now and stash him for that final week on my bench. But for 2018, I can't say, even with the strong finish of the season, that he's a must-draft. I'd get that he's an interesting late-round boomer bust type. You know, maybe you'll know by the middle of April whether you want to keep him or not. But in a 10-team league, Matthew, do you really feel like you're drafting him next year?
I got to know where he's playing. I mean, to me, that's the big question. You know, if he's back in Denver, if he's somehow in Arizona, who actually could have an opening, if he's someplace where you like the hitting environment, sure. If the Giants decide they need Carlos Gonzalez, then I am almost certainly out. But, you know, the first thing I need to know for him in 18 is where he's playing. We move on to another of the biggest stories of the year, and Rhys Hoskins took a brief breather of about a week where he wasn't, maybe not even a week, where he wasn't crushing everything thrown to him, and now he's crushing everything thrown to him again here these past few days. He He is slugging .784 in 33 Major League games, and he has 46 home runs in 618 professional plate appearances this year between AAA and the majors. I understand. I know that is not a thing, but the dude has hit 46 home runs this year. That is ludicrous power, and even though, you know, I wrote a thing a couple of weeks ago sort of noting that he's done a lot of damage against slop, or at least he had over his first 10 to 12 home runs, and I think there will be an adjustment to him, but that kind of power is rare. I mean, that's there's 30 home run power, there's Logan Morrison and Justin Smoke, and there's guys with the ability to do what he's doing. He hit 38 in AA last year. This is big-time power from a guy with a sense of the strike zone. You know, that's the other thing, is he's got as many walks, as strikeouts in the big leagues this year. So I think he's a really intriguing guy. And, again, I mean, it's sort of the question is not, do you want him now? Because, yeah, the question is, how high do you have him going into 18?
Yeah, and that really, I think, depends on whether you view him as a, like you said, like a Logan Morrison, Justin Smoke type 30 home run player, or do you view him as special, as someone who can go high 30s, 40 home runs, or who can combine a 30-something home run season with a 300 average? And I'm pretty sold on him. I'll make the comparison to Gary Sanchez last season, just in the sense that, like, okay, like, Hoskins isn't going to hit home runs at this rate in a full season, otherwise he breaks the home run record next year. And Sanchez last year, 20 home runs, 201 at bats, you know, 53 games played. Like, he wasn't, and similar home run to fly ball percentages. So Hoskins is almost 40. Sanchez is last year, after he came up, was exactly 40. But if you look at what Sanchez has done this year, 30 home runs and 419 at bats. So people who heavily invested in him, expecting a little bit of per, you know, game regression, but still expecting him to be great, they've gotten what they paid for. And I think with Hoskins, like, there's so much to like here. 26 strikeouts and 24 walks.
Yep.
He's hitting .310 with a .257 BABIP, so he's not even getting, and I know he's hitting a lot of fly balls, but he's not even getting great luck on batted balls as far as his batting average goes. So this profiles as someone who can hit you 35, maybe even 40 home runs, and could also hit 300, can drive in 100 runs. I think he gets into the first, unless he really craters in the last 2 weeks, I think he gets into the first five rounds of drafts next season, just like Sanchez did this year.
And the thing about Hoskins is, I don't hate his circumstances for next year. I think that's the thing to remember is, you know, kind of look at, okay, they're not very good, maybe he won't have any chances to drive in runs, but you take a little deeper look, it's a really good park to hit. There are some good hitters in that lineup, and it's starting to come together a little bit. You can kind of see what they like. It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be anything like the worst lineup in the league. And you know, the Braves, the Marlins, these are not going to be dominant pitching staffs. The Nationals will be, the Mets might be, but I don't hate his circumstances for next year. So all of the things you kind of put together, along with liking both the raw power and the strike zone judgment, he's a really exciting player, and I'm sort of coming around a little bit from my own stance, which was pouring a little bit of cold water on him because of what he was hitting early. I'm kind of coming around on him.
I'll give you an interesting comparison for him that I was thinking about the other day with rookies. Now, obviously, Cody Bellinger will run away with the Rookie of the Year award. He's been up almost all year and doing great things. But for next year's drafts, like, are they in the same breath? Because Hoskins is arguably a better candidate to hit 300 than Bellinger is because he strikes out less often. Bellinger has a bit of a better supporting cast, but I think Hoskins is showing enough to expect 30 home runs and 100 RBI. Like, are they in the same breath? Could they be in the same round next year?
I think they're at least closer than a knee-jerk reaction would probably put them.
And is Aaron Judge still way ahead of both of them, or has the second half and all the strikeouts and the concern that maybe if things don't go well next year with Judge, you get a .250 hitter, is he still way ahead of them or not? That was the other thing. I think Judge is still ahead of them because the power has proven to be so impressive, but I think it's a legitimate talking point now.
I think it's fair to ask, but the full season is the full season. And so, you know, I think it's fair to worry about, I think the thing about Judge is, you hit it. You're more worried that he's really going to hurt your batting average next year, though I think that's possible with Bellinger too. But, you know, the guy at this point has hit 41 home runs in less than a full big league season. He scored 109 runs, and that's the other thing. If you're talking, you know, old school four category and not counting runs, that's another matter. But one of the things about Judge is he strikes out a lot, but he also walks a lot. And so he's going to score runs in addition to hitting homers, and he will almost certainly be in a position to drive in runs. So I'm pretty high on him for next year.
Yeah, good supporting cast, him, home park. Everything's really lined up for Judge. I think it is probably still Judge, Bellinger, and then Hoskins, if we're looking at that, like, you know, power hitting bat out of the rookie class. But it's just amazing that in such a short time, Hoskins has actually put his name in there where we can make it a real discussion.
I agree. I think I think it's closer than a knee-jerk reaction would have it.
Yeah.
Starling Marte was a guy, and I talk about this as somebody who had him in my 10-team office league. I suspect quite a few people, though I may just be the idiot, held on to him throughout his suspension, thinking that, you know, what he can offer is pretty special, and if you've got a space, you hold on to him. And then he was a little slow upon coming back and then had this really hot run. I don't remember exactly when. Not that long after he came back. But had this really hot run that made you believe, yeah, okay, this is the guy I drafted back in March. And lately he's just been awful. This guy's a full drop, even if you held on to him this long in shallow leagues, isn't he? Is there any reason – do you see any reason to hold on to him at this point, thinking there's something in the next 2 weeks that's going to change for him?
No, I agree. I think unless you're totally desperate for steals, I think he's a full drop. Yeah, you're right. He did have a nice stretch. Like, August looks a little bit Marte-like. 7 steals, so that's about a 40-steal pace. 18 runs scored, that's about 100 runs, you know, pace. Couple home runs, and we're not looking for a lot of power. And he hit .265. Not a great batting average, but somewhere at least in the range. And then you're right, he's come right back down. I think this is just going to be counted as, I think that he's a full drop now, but also on the flip side, an interesting value pick for next season, because I think this is just a lost year for him. We have seen this before from players who come back from those long suspensions and they just never really find their peak form, you know, after they get back. But next year he is one of those few candidates to steal 40 bases. He has been really valuable in fantasy at times in the past. He's not an old player. I think that he could be an interesting value pick next year if people start to write him off on a bit of a lost season.
He's not a non-draft for me, but it would have to be a value pick for me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how late he goes, because the steal options do dry up pretty quickly. I think that the D. Gordons will go obviously in front of him because they're safer. But then once they're gone, the people who are, you know, through the first 5, 6, 7 rounds and don't have a lot of steals, then he starts to become an interesting boom or bust type, because if everything reverts back to 2016, you've got yourself a 300 hitter, you know, who steals your 47 bases.
I think he will be in a category next year of somebody we talk about a good bit in February and March, which is, if you are counting on him, that's a bad pick. If you are taking him kind of as a bonus, if what you can get from him augments you, that's fine. But he is not going to be a guy that I'm going to take where it'll hurt me if he doesn't come through. And that's a pretty big category. I think he's in that category next year.
Yeah, and that's a tough one, because if that means you can't plan your steals around him, then it means are willing to leave him, that you'll have to leave him for a while. Because those 40 steal type players, you tend to either plan your steals around them or don't take them.
We now move to some more struggling guys, some kind of bigger names. And I am going to rank the names you gave me in order from no way in the world am I dropping this guy under any circumstances to I might have already dropped him. Guys who really just aren't producing in September so far. Anthony Rizzo, Adam Duvall, Andrelton Simmons, Jonathan Lucroy. To me, the question is the two middle guys, because there's no way in the world I'm dropping Rizzo or probably even benching him. And with catcher kind of where it is, I wouldn't really have any problem with picking up whoever the hot catcher is this week and dropping Lucroy. The interesting guys to me are in the middle, where Duvall is in a class of guys that there are a lot of guys like him. And one of them in a shallow league might be on your waiver wire. And Simmons, again, you know, it's kind of turned into a nice year for middle infielders. There are guys in shallow leagues that you can pick up. In the last month in my office league, I picked up Colton Wong and Paul DeJong. So these guys are out there. So Simmons has had an enormous year, and a year that honestly is probably going to get him some MVP votes come the end of the year. But it's also if you need a shortstop strictly, that's tougher. But if you need a middle infielder, there are replacements. So to me, the question is those two guys. Where are you specifically on Simmons and Duvall, and do you think I've misread the other two guys?
No, I'm mostly with you. Yeah, I agree. Well, you can't drop Rizzo. The Rizzo thing would be interesting if he struggles for longer, and then we get to maybe the final week and we're looking at a Cubs possible clinch and less of a workload, and he's not hitting well. That would be interesting for the final week. But right now, no. Lucroy, I'm totally out on. I'm not sure where I'm going to rank him for next year. We'll see where he lands. But if you can't hit in a season split between Texas and Colorado, it's time to be really concerned. I agree with you on Duvall. There's probably, we talked about Matt Olson last week. Like, there's probably players sitting out on your waiver wire in a shallow league like Matt Olson who you can just go, like, why not pick up the hot power hitter and drop the cold power hitter? Because this is the time you can do it, and Duvall's not going to come back and bite you because there's not enough time left. Like, he'd have to really turn around quickly. Simmons is the one who I'd be more on the fence of, where where the position's not as deep. I know you said you found some guys, and it's true. I was thinking of one this morning is Tim Anderson on the White Sox. Like, Anderson's been hitting really well lately. He's been stealing bases lately, kind of doing everything that Simmons did for the first 5 months of the year. So you could pivot right over to Anderson for the last couple weeks, or at least give him next week and see how he does next week, and then decide the final week after that. And it's important to remember with Simmons that there's many, many years of him sitting on waivers throughout the season in shallow leagues before this improvement, and we have to separate his amazing defensive abilities from his work at the plate. You know, I'm with you. I think Rizzo's the only one I need to keep, and the other two, the Simmons and Duvall, depend on what's on my waiver wire. And Lucroy, I would be looking to move on from if I was still using him.
We move on to starting pitchers, and a guy, you know, we started hitters with the hottest team in baseball. We will start pitchers with what has been the hottest team in the National League. That's the Diamondbacks, and again, a guy who is getting talked about a lot in regular baseball, that is Robbie Ray. And he's getting talked about because he is a reason that people think the Diamondbacks can give the Dodgers a real handful in a short series. I agree with that. I have gone from skeptical on Ray at the beginning of the year to pretty much fully in. Just how high do you have him ranked among fantasy starters?
Yeah, I'm going to throw a little cold water on Ray, and I'm just going to say that I think he's not. I don't know if he's an ace for next season. The cold water I'm going to throw is just going to be related to innings. So he's never had a season where he's thrown 175 innings even, and he's probably not going to get there this year. The strikeout rate's great, and it can make up for, like, in 190 innings and 180 innings, he can put up the strikeouts that another pitcher needs 250 innings to put up. And then the other category will be the WHIP category with him, where he's 1.15 this year, which is quite good, but that's with a 274 BABIP. So he's been a little lucky on batted balls, especially compared to his previous seasons. So I'm probably going to have that WHIP more in the 1.2 or 1.23 type range next year. And that will probably take him a little bit out of the top 10 pitchers and make him like a really nice number two starter. I think Ray next year, the other thing is working deep into games, but he's starting to solve that problem more. He's at least become a six-inning pitcher. He's rarely a seven-inning pitcher still, but he's become more of a six-inning pitcher. So I think he's a nice number two who also really, like, if you don't take the Scherzer, Kershaw, Sale, Kluber, I think he's a nice high-end number two where your number two could get you 215 strikeouts if you're going with your number one is more of like a someone with some more question marks or not quite as much upside.
To me, that's exactly it. He's a perfect guy to pair with a second-level ace. He's a perfect guy to pair with. I don't know that he's at this level, but in the way we have talked about Lester in the past couple of years, he's a perfect guy to pair with that kind of pitcher, the sort of lower-end ace. To have a high two and a low one, I think is kind of a perfect fit. And now, man, you're really hurting me here, here, Fred. You make me talk ill about two of my favorite guys in a row here. But we'll do it. Chris Archer, things are not going well, and he had been really impressive. I think just a couple of weeks ago, the talk in around the Rays was, is this guy really turning into the guy we've always known he had the ability to be? He had like an 8-10 start run where he was steady, consistent, deep in the games. And here lately, boy, has he hit a bump in the road. I don't think I could drop him, but I'd have to be really picky about my starts with him right now. But I don't think I could drop him. Are there leagues where you're dropping Archer?
Yeah, I could drop him. I think if I didn't feel comfortable using him next week, I would go ahead and drop him. I don't think he doesn't seem like he's fully healthy right now.
Yeah.
And this is going to impact how we view him for next season. Like, this will haunt him a little bit unless he really turns it around here. This will haunt him a little bit into the off season as far as fantasy rankings go. It has to. Like, he has a 4.06 ERA. He has a 1.26 whip. Now, I know some of that's affected by his recent, his recent struggles, but still, that 1.26 whip is, like, that whip wasn't, like, 1.0 before these struggles or anything.
No,
So he's not a low whip pitcher. His 9 wins this year, I know wins aren't that indicative, but they are a fantasy category. He's going to have divisional matchups down in the last couple weeks. I think you could just, if you're in playoffs, I don't feel comfortable using him in a playoff or riding my season on him right now because I don't think he's healthy. I'm willing to drop him, and then we'll just reevaluate him after the season. He'll probably fall into that low end when we were talking about Robbie Ray. Like, he'll probably fall into that, maybe you start your pitching staff next year with Ray and Archer or something like that. I think that's going to be his value next year. But right now, I don't think there's enough time for me to get back on board.
The one point I would make with Archer, and it affects both the rest of the year and next year, we talk about his health. What he is saying consistently, what the club is saying consistently, is that this is not any kind of a structural thing he's dealing with. It's not like he's got a ligament issue in his arm or anything like that. He was hit on the arm by a line drive, and his explanation is he's still really dealing with the lingering effects of that. That leads me to two conclusions, and one is that it means that I'm not really worried about his health next year. That's the kind of thing that absolutely should just heal up over the winter. The other thing is it leads me to feel like I could be back on board with one start. If he comes out next game, pitches well, doesn't show any ill effects, I'm willing to believe that that condition is gone as soon as he shows that the symptoms are gone. So far as we can tell, a symptoms injury. It's not something in there that's messed up. So my threshold is pretty low for what I need to see from him to get back on board for the rest of this year, and I'm not terribly worried about him for next year just because of the nature of what it is he's dealing with.
I did look up his next two starts, because it's such a short time that we can plan that, are scheduled for home against the Cubs and at the Yankees. So not great. At the Yankees was pretty scary.
That
home against the Cubs is scary enough, I'd say. Yeah, I was hoping I maybe see like a Toronto in there,
right,
like a home Toronto or something, but I didn't.
And now we move to another absolute favorite of mine who is dealing with a significant physical issue, Noah Syndergaard. At this point, it's very hard to see him contributing anything in 2017. Your question for me in the notes was, would you be comfortable believing in him as your ace in 18? And I think my answer to that is only if I were really confident that right after it I could get somebody else. If I were confident that I could get a high-end two after him, yes. But as much as I love Syndergaard, I may view him more as that high-end two next year than I do as a guy that I would be comfortable relying on as my ace. Am I too down on possibly my favorite pitcher in baseball?
No, I don't think so. You may be even a little optimistic. Well, I was thinking how many starts will we project him for next season? Like 25? Like, you can't project 30. It seems really harsh to project like 18 or 19. And I mean, some of it will determine how he comes into spring training, but he did heal quickly. I mean, he was injured this year and did not.
No,
I thought he would be back.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, I thought he would be back by now and maybe make a few September starts, put our minds at rest, and we could go ahead and project him for maybe 27 starts or something. But I think he'll fall in with Ray and Archer and, and then Luis Severino, who's coming off one great year and a bad year before that, and John Lester, who's been up and down all season. I think there'll be a pile of these pitchers around pitcher 10 to 15 to 20. Carlos Carrasco, who's kind of up and down, will be in there. And then it'll just be personal preference if you want to start your staff with maybe two of them, and you take them in rounds 4 and 5 or 5 and 6, and those are your two staff aces. And he'll be the risky but high-reward part of that group.
You touched on something that I've talked about before that I really do think is important. I think it's, every time I mention it, I couch it like this because people can take this the wrong way. This is not a sign of of mental strength or toughness or anything like that. It's not a sign of willingness to pitch through pain. I'm not talking about that at all. But some humans heal faster than other humans. And I think it is fair to worry as to whether Noah Syndergaard is one of those humans who doesn't heal faster. And that's no reflection on his character. It is potentially a reflection on his fantasy value. And I think that that is something that you kind of take into consideration. Some guys get hurt and then they come back. If he's a guy who is, we already know, gets his share of injuries. If we also know that, you know, compared to somebody like, seems to be Max Scherzer, you know, he is somebody that you probably take the long end of an estimate when he goes down. That's something to take into consideration when you're talking about 2018 draft picks.
Yeah, absolutely. Those two things. How likely is this person to not? And some pitchers can seem to effortlessly go through 6 months of making starts year in, year out, and for the most part, and don't, you know, and don't show any signs of trouble. Whereas there's the Steven Strasburg types who seem to always have something. Maybe not doesn't knock them out for 3 months, but it knocks them out for one month at some point every season. And Syndergaard, you worry, could be the bad combination of both, where something crops up every year and he doesn't bounce back quickly. Yep. But, you know, he probably have another injury-plagued year for us to get to that point. At the very least, I think we'll project him for 160 innings, something like that, next year, and then hope that he beats it.
I think that's reasonable. A question that is somewhat less of a relevant question than it was 24 hours ago. Doug Fister had been pitching really well. You asked if I was interested in adding him. Not only was I interested, I added him, and then I regretted it. Guys like this are so start to start that 48 hours ago, are you interested in him was a really good question. And now, are you still interested in him is just as much a question because it is so start to start. And I liked the matchup a lot. And, ooh, boy, did it go bad. So as we look at the last couple of games, the Red Sox are definitely evaluating Fister. They are definitely taking him seriously as a possible member of their playoff rotation. So he's going to get starts. They're going to see what they have. Are you more interested in him, or are you more interested in some of the kids getting opportunities, like Dylan Peters, Robert Stevenson, guy we talked about recently, Brandon Woodruff? Do you like the veteran with the so-so track record but the great circumstances, or do you like one of these kids in tougher circumstances with maybe higher upside?
Yeah, I might like Peters a little bit better. I will say that I haven't swayed too much on Fister based on his last start. I mean, it was obviously a bad start. One of the more under-noticed statistics this season is the Oakland A's have been really good against right-handed pitching this year. One of the best teams in baseball and one of the worst against lefties. So I mean, if I was going to take Fister with a bit of a grain of salt, it was that maybe that A's matchup was a little tougher than a lot of people gave it credit for. The Fister one is a really tough decision, though, because he's a two-start pitcher next week, but they're at the Orioles and at the Reds. And those are two tough places to pitch. I think if I'm really chasing wins, I would not move off him. I'd probably still give him a chance next week. If I'm really concerned about my ratios, I think the at Baltimore is enough to make me not want to use him. And even though the Reds haven't pitched well in the second half, they have still hit pretty well. So it's risky, but it's almost like you have to make your final decision on Fister now because he'll really burn you next week or really help you.
Yeah. Cole Hamels is really struggling. Again, we're at the time of year where questions you would laugh at 2 months ago are fair questions now. Is he a guy you'd drop if you had a need for something?
Yeah, Hamels I would. In fact, I think I would drop Hamels before Archer because with Archer, I think Archer is a really good pitcher who's just dealing with an injury, and as you said, he could at least turn it around quite quickly. Whereas Hamels, like, there's been a lot of signs here. Like, his whip was higher last year. I had him as kind of someone to avoid for this season. He's danced around trouble a lot more than he used to. He's not keeping the bases clean like he used to. It's caught up with him a little bit lately as an ERA over 6 in the past 30 days. You know, I'm going start with Hamels for sure and deciding whether I want him for that specific matchup. He's not a must play for me anymore, and I would drop him if I really needed the spot.
Yeah. To me, it's the question, when you compare him to Archer, to me it becomes very much about the upside. What's the best you're going to get from Cole Hamels if he's suddenly right versus what's the best you're going to get from Chris Archer if he's suddenly right? To me, that's a really easy call. I'm going to take the guy who you know, absolutely could rack up 25, 27 strikeouts over a three-start span here. We will move to bullpens in just a moment. Before we do, want to take a minute to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, focusing on the lighter side of baseball. If you made it this far with us, we think there's a pretty good chance you'll enjoy their podcast as well. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode made sense of Justin Verlander in an Astros uniform, and then debated how the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices would line up on a baseball diamond. If that sounds like something you'd be into, search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. And now we move on to bullpens, and everybody listening will be absolutely shocked that we will be talking about the Angels again. They're still doing weird and inscrutable things with the late innings. I still like Blake Parker because I like the pitcher, and if you picked him up, you picked him up knowing that this is how the Angels have done things, and it might be weird. If you're desperate for saves, maybe you move off of him. But unlike some of these people some of the guys we talk about when we talk about desperate for saves, I still like Parker the pitcher. So to me, I'm not dropping him unless there's somebody out there getting saves that I really have faith in. Where are you in the Angel bullpen right now?
Yeah, I'm with you with Parker, and Parker can help you even if he's not – he won't hurt you if he's not getting saves. He should pitch well. So I think the real tough one for me is if you're in a playoff and next week, or if you're setting a weekly lineup and you really need saves next week, like, are you comfortable using Parker? I think if I was in a head-to-head league in a playoff and I had that RP spot, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable using Parker next week because I would be afraid that I wouldn't get any wins or saves out of him. But in a roto league, I'm still fine with rolling him out there because he should help my ratios and get plenty of strikeouts even if he doesn't get saves.
Would you rather have him, start him, or Juan Nicasio?
I would rather start Juan Nicasio, I think. I think I've pivoted that quickly over to Nicasio just because I think he seems to be the answer for a St. Louis bullpen that was looking for an answer. And I haven't seen anything yet to suggest that they don't think he's the answer. So I think there's a better chance that I get saves from Nicasio next week. And I like that Nicasio, his walk rate is way down this year. So he's starting to pitch more like a closer. So like what you need there, where he won't frustrate his manager by walking the leadoff hitter in the ninth inning of a close game. So I would rather just go for Nicasio. Are you with me on that?
Yeah. Do you remember a year and a half ago when we talked about committing about Juan Nicasio reliever?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I have been waiting for him, and I'm not just talking about the last 2 weeks. He's been a really good reliever this year. I've been waiting for him to really be that guy for a long time. So he's a guy I believe in. He's a guy I like a lot. I kind of wish I'd like written down on a sheet of paper on that day that the Cardinals acquired him so I kind of prove it. Or I wish I just said something at the time because I definitely had that thought when they picked him up of, they don't know what in the world they're doing in the ninth right now, and this guy's pretty good. So I kind of wish I'd made note of that somewhere so that I could do something other than claiming it 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm buying on him. I think that's a really nice match of player and opportunity. Aroldis Chapman had a really weird outing yesterday where they brought him in for the long save. He was shaky in the first inning, and then he looked good in the second inning. And it answered one question about him because it means that not only is he a guy they're going to use to get saved, but he's a guy they're going to go out of their way to get into a game when there's a save chance. He came in the eighth, even with that deep bullpen. But I don't feel like it really answered. I don't feel like the performance questions are really answered yet. So I think we probably moved off of don't start Chapman this week, which is I think where we were a week or two ago. But I'm still not sure how much I trust him, but I don't think you can bench him if he's going to be getting saves and strikeouts just because you have some worry about the ratios. Do you have more confidence? Did you see yesterday's outing any differently? What's your read on Chapman right now?
Yeah, I think I'm starting him. I mean, the good thing about yesterday's outing is he got four outs, and they were all on strikeouts. Now, along the way, he also gave up a hit and two walks and threw 34 pitches, so that's a little concerning, but I think the four strikeouts, like, that's, I think, a step in the right direction. I think if I own Chapman and I've gone through all this with him, I think I'm going to use him next week and hope for the best. I don't feel as comfortable using him as I thought I would in September or as I thought I would, you know, when I drafted him in April or in March. I thought I would be totally comfortable using him in September, and I'm not. But I think now I'm ready to use him.
Speaking of closers and your confidence level in them, Fernando Rodney has started to show some cracks again. Had a really rough run a few days ago. I mean, he seems to still be the guy. I don't think there's any indication that he's not the guy, but what's your worry level with Rodney right now?
It's not high enough to take him out of my lineup if I need saves, but if I only had room for Rodney or Juan Nicasio next week, I think I would use Nicasio. And
yeah,
I think I might use Rodney over Blake Parker if I really needed saves, just because I need the saves and I'm not sure that I'll get them from Parker, but I think I would rather use Nicasio. I mean, you and I are both known as not having a lot of faith in Rodney. He has he has held the job, obviously, and full marks him. He might get 40 saves this season. That being said, when things went south with Rodney last season late, they went really south really fast. And that would be my concern, is that he is someone who could actually lose you your matchup next week, whereas if he has a bad week, that could be, you know, a couple blown saves and six runs allowed or something like that. Things did go poorly for him late last year, and it was ugly at times.
The one thing I would note is after today, they play the Rockies today. After today, here's the rest of the Diamondbacks schedule for 2017. At Giants, at Padres, home for Marlins, home for Giants, at Royals. If I am on the fence about any Diamondbacks pitcher of any stripe from here to the end of the year, I'm saying starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
Mark Melanson out for the year. Sam Dyson still holding on to that job. Is there closer controversy in San Francisco next year?
I think no, as long as Melanson's fine in spring training. I think the contract
yeah,
he has to be their closer to justify the contract to keep his value on the potentially ever on the trade market. I think if he's healthy in spring training, he's their closer, and if he's not healthy in spring training, then there's the closer controversy, whether it's with him and Sam Dyson or with him and someone else. But I think it's still his job to lose, don't you?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think, you know, managers will always say, I'm going to play the guy who's the best able to do the job, and I don't look at contracts. And I'm sure that they mean it when they say it, but, boy, it's funny how often it doesn't turn out that way. Also, Mark Melanson, when healthy, is a good pitcher. I think that's the other thing, is it's not like we're talking about, say, Fernando Rodney here. We're talking about a guy who, if he is healthy, probably should be the guy. You know, Dyson's been good, but I don't think that's a hard call if everybody's ready. I think it's nice to have somebody as your backup that you know can do it. But I don't think that's a hard call the way it would be with somebody who had less track record.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if Melanson rolls into spring training and looks good, he might be a really nice value pick next year.
Yeah. Yep. Royals have gone from the most automatic bullpen in the game to a bullpen with, I guess, fantasy opportunities. Scott Alexander, Brandon Maurer, somebody else. Who do you want from that mix?
I think Maurer. I think I want Maurer over Alexander. But I don't view Maurer as like the closer. I would rather use Nicasio, obviously.
Yep.
Chapman. I would rather use Rodney, and I would even rather use Blake Parker than Maurer. So he's way down for me.
Yeah.
Would you put him also at the bottom of all the relievers?
I think that makes total sense. I think that's pretty much where I am with him as well.
Yeah.
We move to the two-star pitch. Fred, come on, man. Come on.
His name keeps coming back to haunt you.
Two-star pitchers this week. Patrick Corbin at San Diego and home for the Marlins. Kevin Gausman, home for the Red Sox and Rays. Doug Fister at the Orioles and Reds. Dan Straley, home for the Mets and at the D-backs. Jaime Garcia, home for the Twins and at Toronto. Matt Harvey at Miami, home for Washington. Luis Perdomo, home for Arizona and Colorado. There are a lot of options I like on this list because there are a lot of good matchups and pitchers I don't hate. And so you can kind of be picky. And I think that the guy I like the most from this is Corbin. I really like those matchups. I like Straley okay, though at Arizona is definitely scary. But I like the pitcher. Garcia makes me nervous. Fister makes me a little nervous, though I don't hate it. But I'm probably going something like Corbin, Gausman, Perdomo, Straley, or Straley, Perdomo. Who do you like most from this list?
Yeah, I was interested to see where you would put Gausman since we've discussed him a lot this season. I have him second as well. I would go Corbin first for sure. I think that at San Diego is really appealing. They've struggled against lefties this year. I know they did have success against Corbin in Arizona recently, but I'm going to treat that as a bit of an aberration. I think he gets back on track against them. Gausman, I think, is my number two. He's mostly been good lately. And home to Boston, home to Tampa, I mean, they're not easy matchups, but I think they're manageable. And I do think Perdomo's probably third, even though obviously the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are among the highest scoring teams, but they're not both not as good on the road. I think Matt Harvey's like totally out for me. I couldn't use him.
No chance.
In an NL only.
Garcia,
I'm pretty close. I don't think I could really use Garcia. So then the middle group for me, where like if I'm really just, you know, going to throw pitchers out there and cross my fingers and, you know, see what happens, but I don't really feel good about it, are probably Straley and Pfister are in the middle for me that way, where if I'm chasing wins and strikeouts more than I'm worried about my ratios, or I'm just going boom or bust and I don't care if, say, I'm in third right now,
right,
and I don't care if I finish first or fifth. I'm just going to throw them out and see what happens.
All right. Just a little more than 2 weeks to go in the regular season, but we will still keep coming to you until the regular season ends and then just a little less often after that. This is Fantasy 411. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk. Thanks, everybody, for listening.